to be honest, I thank God every day for this job because I really enjoy it. And so it's been really a great move in my career.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we welcome Marcy Lanoux, Vice President of CSA Search and Consulting. Marcy brings a wealth of experience in both athletics and leadership development, making her one of the most respected voices in the search and consulting space. She previously served in athletic administration roles at the University of San Diego, where she helped grow the athletics brand and oversaw several key areas of external relations. Her career also includes significant experience in fundraising, branding, and program building that have directly impacted the success of the institutions she has served. Now, with CSA, Marcy works closely with athletic departments and universities nationwide to identify and hire coaches as well as administrators that align with their vision and values. Her insight into the hiring process has helped countless coaches understand what it takes to stand out in an increasingly competitive market. In this episode, we discuss some deal breakers that may hurt a potential coaching candidate for a position, how to position yourself to be a head coach in 3 years, and skill sets that coaches should be looking to add in this new landscape of basketball. Please welcome to the podcast, Marcy Lanoux. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
What's up, coaches and everybody out there? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, the faces and voices you love to hear so much. But today, honestly, if you're a member, you've heard from her before. If you're not, well, then this is your opportunity to learn a little bit more. Today, we're graced and be able to join with CSA, the VP at CSA Search and Consulting, Marcy Lanoux. Marcy, how are we doing? Welcome back.
Doing great. Pumped to be back. I feel like I'm just family now with you guys, so I'm excited to be back with you. But for my first time on the podcast, so super excited to be here with everybody. And hopefully we do get a chance to reach new coaches who can tune in and hear the good word.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is one side of the game I feel like a lot of people definitely are not familiar with. And that's why this is phenomenal. Just one, give them the, I guess we'll go resort to the roundtables that we have had. We had a lot of questions that would pop up from it. So there's obviously people in a lot of interest in being able to learn more about it. So if we double back on some of those questions, I apologize in advance, but at least it's definitely something for people out there that to learn a little bit more about this side of things, especially in the coaching realm. I guess first things first, we always ask coaches, and we never really had the opportunity to ask you, but just like what kind of drove you into this search in the consulting side of athletics? Because I know you have a heavy line of work being in universities, athletic departments prior to this, but what really drove you into the search consulting side?
Yeah, it's a good question, Doug. Honestly, I wasn't planning for this. This wasn't something that I marked down when I entered the industry 15, 20 years ago and said, hey, I want to eventually get into executive search. And to be quite honest, you know, how I even got into college athletics, I was a former student athlete, played soccer at Louisiana Lafayette, and then ended up transferring to University of South Florida, where I ended up doing 2 years of internship work in the athletics department. And that's where I really was like, wow, you can actually do this for a living and people make decisions on behalf of the programs that I've been a part of. And I didn't realize I was just going out there as a student athlete and playing ball. So it was a blessing in that way that I was even able to make a career and get into college athletics. But to answer your question more directly, I thought I wanted to be an AD. That was my career trajectory, and that's what I wanted to pursue. And over the last 17 years, I made my way primarily through fundraising in college athletics and was at a variety of different schools. Started off at South Florida, then worked at University of Miami, then went back to South Florida for a second stint, and then was recruited to go to Southern Miss in a fundraising role again, and then ultimately made my way to University of San Diego. And really the common denominator in all those moves was I had a few different bosses and ADs I worked with just through natural transitions in university leadership. But Bill McGillis was the one who I started off as an intern with, along with several others, but he's the one who recruited me to Southern Miss, and he's the one who brought me to University of San Diego. So I had a champion in that way who really believed in me, and every stop along the way, he just gave me more responsibility and trust. But what ended up happening was it was really in my last year or two at University of San Diego where I was the senior associate AD, had sport oversight, was really getting to a point where I'm like, gosh, I have the itch. I feel like I can lead an athletic department. I'm ready to be an AD, or at least pursue it and see if I can really make this happen. And it so happened where CSA called me, Drew Turner, our president, called me and he said, hey, we got an opportunity that I feel like you fit their profile really well. And it actually was the Long Beach State AD job. And I ended up being really excited about it. And I had known about Long Beach State just from being in the region, and ended up pursuing it and ended up being a finalist. And that was the first time I had ever interviewed for an AD job, to be honest. So I was actually shocked myself, but ultimately wasn't the one chosen. But nonetheless, going through that search process, it was really a blessing in a lot of different ways. I grew from it, learned about myself, but it also allowed me to meet Drew Turner, who ultimately had a vacancy within our organization a couple months later, or maybe it was a year later. And he called me and he said, hey, have you ever thought about executive search? And again, I didn't, but I had been through the process. So I at least had a sense of what a process is like and how a search firm can play a really incredible role, both for the candidate and the institution. And I really enjoyed my time with Drew really shepherding me through that process. And so when I really heard him out and listened more about the opportunity, I felt like my skill set, I love being with people, relationships matter to me, and I want to make an impact on the industry. And I felt, gosh, this is really a way for me to do that on a grander scale than just one institution. That's really what led me here. And to be honest, I thank God every day for this job because I really enjoy it. And so it's been really a great move in my career.
Does it seem like, Marcia, and just based on the timeline that you're describing, I know you never really see, you watch a plane take off, and it's almost like two planes took off at the same time with this, between like when you stepped into the search firm world and the actual search firm world becoming a bigger and deeper part of college athletic. It's almost like two planes taking off at the same time. Is that kind of how it's been? Because it's almost like when you jumped into it, it was maybe just on the ground floor of really starting to become part of college athletics. Now you can't hear about a search, an opening without, that's the first question that coaches try to ask is which search firm's involved with it.
Yeah, it's a good point. The evolution of search firms is skyrocketing. It's just, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of benefit in using a firm because they're really facilitating a process. We're not decision makers, but we help facilitate a really professional process. We help build the pool. But the way we do it and the way we can do it is it's highly confidential, where a lot of institutions are subject to public records requests. And it, with college athletics and coaching searches and AD searches, it's highly visible. You have a set of fans or supporters who are tracking, when are you going to make this hire? And it's just so much passion goes behind searches. And there's a lot of pressure on decision makers, whether they're presidents or athletic directors, to make the right hire. So we're able to really facilitate a process that's really professional. We do it every day. We do tons of searches. So it's just something we have that we're confident in. And we know, and we are able to vet candidates really quickly because we just live in this market, right? So we're talking to coaches, we're talking to ADs constantly. So it will take us 1 minute to jump on a call with someone and try to vet someone further, which timing is of the essence in a search, right? Oftentimes you see coaching searches that may last 5 days. You can turn one around in 3 days. So it's timing is of the essence, and we're able to do that on behalf of the athletic director. That just helps with a more efficient timeline. In addition to that, I think now more than ever, ADs just have so much on their plate, whether it's navigating the demands of NIL, rev share, managing a board of directors or trustees. So us being able to help is with their search, it's incredibly, I think, helpful, because it takes one, and they're extremely involved, but it, at least the process part of it, is a weight off their shoulders in a way. And we're just able to be a trusted partner and someone they can lean on. And I don't see that changing. I think the demands of an AD are going to continue to increase. The other thing about a search firm is there's almost instant credibility with the process, because we are the experts, although ADs are certainly experts as well. But I just think, since we live in it every day, you know, this is what we do, and we just know the coaches really well. I think sky's the limit.
So you mentioned too, like, you can hop on a phone call real quick, talk to somebody, and have a search ultimately go from just the beginning stages to ultimately sealing a deal with somebody in a seat in 3 to 5 days. But is there anything like on a phone call, like that vetting process, or maybe not even on a phone call, just going throughout that process? Is there anything that really is, maybe personally to you, or just if you want to even talk the whole industry as a search firm, anything that's really like a deal breaker, anything that's like a, yeah, we don't want this kid? Because there's times where you're talking to a recruit, I could say as a coaching perspective, talking to a recruit, and you hear this kid talking, and you're like, before I never really fed too much into those conversations. Oh yeah, it's just a quick phone conversation, but don't look too much into it. But I feel like now you can get a little bit more information out of it by just the way people talk, by the way you can tell if somebody's ready to have the phone conversation or not. So is there anything, deal breakers, or anything that going throughout that searching, you know, what you're looking for that really can turn you off of a candidate?
Yeah, good question. So in all of our vetting calls, what we do is we always share what the institution is looking for. So we always lead with, hey, this is the profile. This is what's most important to them. They're looking for somebody who has regional ties to the Pacific Northwest, or whatever the case may be. Because I think that's a helpful starting point in terms of our referencing and fact finding to make sure they fit the profile, right? We don't want to go down the road with a coach who just is a mismatch. So that is really important for coaches to know, because some coaches have been like, gosh, I couldn't even get an interview and I've been accomplished and all these things. But if you don't fit what they're looking for, it's a mismatch. But so I want to start off there. But deal breakers, it's interesting what we find out. We can find out so much about candidates, and really, I would say we're really the fact finders, and we will hand the information to the AD to then sort out what is a deal breaker. Because I think there's things certainly you can get past, but it's what is the threshold? Certainly, major infractions are going to be a challenge. You have to, normal NCAA violations, I think, are common. We see that a lot. But major infractions, you don't want to be involved in that. You want to run a clean program or be a part of a clean program. You also, I've seen deal breakers where you've tweeted something on social media that is not in alignment with higher education. It's maybe your own opinion, but it could be a deal breaker. The thing about college athletics is you may have your own opinions, but you're a public figure and you're representing the institution. So there could be deal breakers if you have tweets out there for ADs to actually take a look at you if it's misaligned with the university's mission. You really want, if you're tough, hard-nosed, that's fine. Don't worry about that. That's part of your personality. But if there's anything that crosses the line in terms of not treating student athletes with care and integrity. You can still be tough, but so there's things like that we also can find out that could be deal breakers for ADs.
Yeah. It's interesting how you said you guys have to do the best you can and then let them make the decision, because there might, we've seen situations, and I won't mention coaches or schools, you've seen maybe there was a dust up with the law or something that went down, or, and do you find that sometimes schools, if they decide they want to win that badly, will say, ah, you know what? No big deal, because this is somebody that we really want.
Regardless. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it goes back to the university values and the mission. I've been a part of institutions that are very different in terms of just what is the threshold of something in someone's past that they can get behind or move past on. And then I've been a part of institutions where it's just been easy deal breakers, just because, again, the mission of the institution. But I do think there's certainly precedents out there in our industry where people have had some blips in their past and they've gotten opportunities again. So it's really, I think, again, it's really up to the institution and where the president, the AD, board of trustees, where their comfort level is. And right to your point, do they want to win at a certain level where it's just maybe more guaranteed, or they have better confidence that they can win with this individual, that they're willing to look past some of those. But yeah, it's really case by case.
And you said you can find stuff out. The one thing that is, and it's crazy nowadays, but like, especially as a coach, you can go on Google, type a coach's name, and especially if they've had somewhat of a name for themselves, even if they haven't, if they're a small tier Division III coach, you can go on there and you can find everything about that person. Like, yeah. It's truly hard to hide from the internet, like keeping yourself off of it. It's really not possible, because somebody else can put information about you. You have Google, you have social media, you have all the records over the internet, where I'll give a prime example. It's not that I put anything bad by any means. I don't want to make it sound like that, but a tweet that I put 15, 20 years ago when I was in high school, somebody told me, they're like, yeah, hey, you might want to go through and just look, delete some stuff. And I was like, it wasn't anything bad, but it was just simply like, I looked at it and I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, if somebody were to go through there, it's not going to get me not hired or fired, but it's definitely going to be a little bit of a, oh, why is that on there? So it's like but you don't realize people can go that far back. So one thing, I guess this is my way of saying, make sure people keep your social media clean, and because anybody can see that stuff.
Yeah. It's a good point. You really should, especially if you're chasing a head coaching role, you really need to look back on your social media and just delete things that maybe from your college years that are, again, to your point, Doug, maybe not hire and fire, but you were out after a game and hanging out and having a good time. Like, I think there's certainly, you want to put your best foot forward, right, as you're pursuing opportunities. And you don't want something little like that to come into question, because these things, it's so competitive, these searches, and you're going against really qualified candidates. And so really looking back, I think, is a good point, Doug. And because we'll also, we do run social media checks. We Google, and then we have a third party firm who runs like a formal check. So we, again, we can find really everything that's out there. And again, it's not going to be hidden. That's for sure. We'll certainly find it.
Let me ask you this, Marcy. I was actually just talking to somebody about this recently. When a school's trying to figure out what they're looking for, but let's just say somebody's not maybe at the search firm stage where they're going to maybe be a candidate, but they're in that next kind of fringe area.
Yeah.
And they're still trying to grow and develop their career. Does winning still matter that you found out? Because obviously everyone can present themselves in a certain way where you're as attractive as possible, and that's great. Hopefully the majority of it or all of it is factual, which you guys can find that out. But does winning still matter as you talk to schools and they're trying to figure out what they want? Is that still a factor when you're going through this process?
Absolutely. You have to be a part of a winning program. And like Bucky McMillan's a great example of that. I think ADs want the confidence of a winner, so they'll even consider different levels. And so I think that's really important to know. And it's not just Bucky. That there were a few hires last year and even the year before. And I think that's going to continue to be the case. We certainly had candidates in a lot of searches last year that were coming from lower divisions or lower resourced institutions where they were winners though, and then had every other box checked in terms of institutional alignment, recruiting footprint, X's and O's, all those other things. Yeah, winning matters. Now, what's interesting is I have a lot of assistant coaches almost ask me that question, right? Where they're not the head coach, so they're not necessarily the one with the win-loss record, right? Or, but they are because you're part of that program. So my advice to assistant coaches who are aspiring to be a head coach, the single most important thing is make sure who you're working for in the head coach is going to be somebody that you can learn from. And don't look at the wins and losses yet. I'm going to get there. Look for who you're going to be working for. And is it the type of institution that interests you for your future too? So for example, if you're someone like, I'll give the example of my time at USD, University of San Diego. I love the West Coast Conference. That would be something like, if I'm a coach, I want to target schools where I feel like, okay, my dream is to be the head coach at, let's just say, UW. Then my path, I should probably, UW's a high academic school. I should probably try to think about and look at opportunities in the WCC, high academic institutions in that regional footprint. So you got to be strategic too. So number one, who you work with. Number two, strategic in the type of institutions you want to chase for your future. And then number three, you really want to be a part of a winning program if you can. It's hard. Winning's hard to do. But the good thing is, I think as an assistant coach, you're still at a point in your career where, okay, if you go to be a part of a program that hits the first two buckets, but you're not winning, okay, maybe you move on after 2 years to find that winning program. But at least you've been with a good coach and good institution. So then you're able to still have that on your resume, but then you're moving on to try to chase more of the wins. So that would be my advice as you try to aspire to be in the chair one day to be a head coach.
So I want to stay on real quick the aspiring aspect. So like for people who are aspiring to be that head coach, maybe they're an assistant now, maybe they are 2 to 3, 5, 10 years down the line, whatever it might be, but just essentially younger coaches, because I feel like that's a lot of people that listen to this. How do you recommend at this time of stage that they prep themselves for that next opportunity to get that head coaching position? What are some things in the process, whether it's like a 10 to 15 page resume or anything like that? Is there anything that you would recommend that they do now?
Yeah, good question. One, I think you have to make it known that you want to be a head coach. So telling your head coach, hey, I have aspirations of being a head coach, because I've spoken with a lot of head coaches that say, hey, I've known this assistant wants to be a head coach, so I've given him or her more responsibilities to help try to round out their scope of responsibilities. So anyways, I think that's step one, right? You want to make it known that you have those aspirations. Number two is anytime you have a call from a head coach or an administrator saying, hey, we have this assistant coach who you have to consider, and maybe they're 1 to 2 years from being ready, but they are a rising star. So I think being strategic with who can be your champion and who is your champion, to then, again, make it known with the firms that, you know, this person needs to be on your radar. Because that, to me, if someone calls me and makes that endorsement, that has a lot of weight to it. Versus us trying to identify people just in the market based on profile. And then number three, almost where you were going with some of your comments, is I do the idea of it becomes really clear when you have assistant coaches who are interviewing for the first time for a head coaching role because they've not done it before. It could appear, unless they do a really good job, and this is what I'm hoping to help with, but it can come off and appear that they're lacking experience and maybe haven't thought through the lens of a head coach of every aspect of running a program. They're right now a really good assistant coach with a set of responsibilities, but have they thought about, okay, if I do become a head coach next year, what does that look like? What are the values in our program? Who's the staff I'm going to hire? What are we going to do in the portal? How do I need to rebuild the roster? I need to understand what the roster currently is at that institution. And then what's my philosophy to build the roster? Like, you got to be thinking CEO, big picture. You got to be thinking about, okay, the first 90 days, I'm also getting on the road and meeting with donors. I got to see who's supporting our program. I got to make that connection. I got to have an alumni event to invite the guys and gals back to campus. You just have to think about, this is your program that you own. And it is like a CEO. You're responsible for every aspect. So you got to think about A to Z. So there's a good exercise in whether it's creating a deck or slideshow, whatever it is, even for your own good, of what does a program look like under Marcy Lanoux. And going through that exercise just to get your thought process going, and you're then beginning to organize yourself to then be that much more prepared when you do have the opportunity. And so that would be my advice. Certainly think aspiring coaches, if they go through that exercise, it's really helpful.
You know what, Marcy, I'm literally going to pick right up where you left off and where Doug left off with this, because I did that. This probably would have been 2008, maybe the year after the Final Four, is in that spring. But I did it at my kitchen table over the course of two or three nights. And it was organic. I'm talking pen, the legal pad, just what do I believe? What's my philosophy? Because I'd always sometimes felt guilty as an assistant of looking for other stuff, because I'm like, my focus is always, hey, help the head coach, help the big guy win. Everything will work out for everybody else. And then I eventually, as I talked to more people and got advice, I literally sat down and over a 2-day period, I wrote down my philosophy and what changed. It wasn't that I all of a sudden became this job hungry seeker once I got my philosophy put together, but it gave me the clarity of what you're talking about. Because what young assistants need to understand is you go from tunnel vision to being a head coach is 3D.
Yeah.
It is IMAX theater, like all angles, everything. That's because you're thinking about being in your lane as an assistant. I'm going to do this for the head coach. I got my calls. I got these recruits. I got this scout. All of a sudden, it goes from A to Z. You're thinking about everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's never a day where you're not thinking about everybody. As an assistant, you can have a day where you don't think about everybody. You can think about, I just got my stuff to do. I'm going to knock out these things and I'm going to walk my dog and go get some ice cream and whatever. We had a day off, I'm going to take advantage of it. But as a head coach, on that day off even, you are still thinking about every single aspect of the program, whether it's ticking or dormant. And the year has cycles where things are ticking and where things are a little bit more dormant. But that it never leaves your mind. But talk about the reason why it's important for someone to do that from the aspect of, like you said, Doug said, aspiring coach, you put your philosophy together. Talk about how important that is, because when that first Zoom pops up and now you're meeting with, you got people on the Zoom, 4 or 5 different screens on the Zoom, that's when the conviction of what you believe comes through. And you want those people to feel that on the other side of the screen. So talk about how when you might go through in 5 days in a search, you may go through 7 of those.
Yeah.
But then out of the 7, you can feel who's really convicted in what they believe and who isn't. So just talk about the importance of that. And is that really true?
Yeah. Yeah. I love the word conviction, because I agree with you. if you think about it, an average basketball search is probably 5 days. Let's just say, I think that's the average.
It used to be 3 weeks.
Warp speed. And to your point, the way typically a search will go is, right, you get on a Zoom interview with maybe just the AD or maybe, you know, a really tight group. And that is your one shot to then become a finalist. You don't have 3 weeks where you're meeting with three people different times and multiple times. You have to get on that Zoom, which also oftentimes can be an hour long, which if you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, an hour is really fast. And so you got to come on there and have conviction, A, that you want the job. They want to know that they're talking to someone who is excited and enthusiastic about taking that job. So you have to have conviction with that. And the other thing is you have to have conviction of what your program looks like. I share this as advice too. You need the AD to envision you being the coach on Friday. If it's Monday, you need to get on that Zoom and convince the AD that he or she can see you in the locker room on Friday delivering the first speech to the team. And then 2 hours later, building out a staff and then looking in the portal or looking at. So it's, you have to convey that, and you can't wait for the AD to ask you certain questions and hope that they ask you the question that you're prepared for. If they don't happen to ask you a question that you feel is really important to who you are and how you would lead and what your program would look like, you need to figure out a way to get it in there and make sure you leave that call without any regrets. But yeah, that's really important. The conviction piece in a few different areas is really important, because that AD may be just using that one day to talk to 7-8 coaches, and they're making a decision pretty quickly of who's moving forward. There's not many people who are deliberating very long. So you really have 1 hour and you got to give it your all.
I love the way you said that, because again, if Doug is one of the people, one of your assistants, and you're the AD and I'm sitting here and I'm trying to interview, by the time the Zoom is over, they're going to remember 15 to 20, maybe 25% of what you said. They're going to remember 85 to 90% of how you said it. Mm-hmm. And so when the Zoom is over, they're going to be more caught up in how you made them feel. They're going to pay attention to the content as well. But that's where the conviction piece comes in, because when they close that laptop, it's, how did this person make us feel? Do we want to live with this person every day? Because you take a job, like, you're living with each other. Like, you see them every day. Is this somebody that we would enjoy spending time with and hanging out with? And that, it's so important to obviously have your ducks in a row, X and O wise and preparation wise and content wise, but don't get so caught up in the, maybe I won't say it's not minutia, but just some of the material. And you've got to be able to you've got to absorb your material into who you are, to where it doesn't sound rehearsed. It doesn't sound like a movie audition where you're reading from a page. Yes, how do we catch this monster who's a murderer? And like, no, you can't read off a script or sound rehearsed. Like, they have to feel that this is you.
Yeah.
And so that's such a really big deal. So I'm glad you brought all that up.
Yeah. One thing I just want to add to that real quick, because that's a good point. And I battled this myself for many years as an administrator of, what should I be saying? How should I want people to perceive me as? And then as I've grown, I've really realized my strengths are who I am authentically, not who I think someone thinks I need to be or whatnot. So to your point, it's really, again, it's a match that we're trying to make. Be your authentic self and let your personality come through as who you are. Because again, if it's not a match, it may not be based on your record, how you performed in the interview, whatever the case, but that's a good thing, because then it's not a match for you either. So you need to find what is a good institution that could be a match for everything. So yeah, being your authentic self, I think, is really important. And that's when you're happiest too, is who wants to be feeling like you have to be something different? That's unfortunate when people, and I know that's, there's some realities to that and people are living that life, but definitely find where you can be your authentic self and embraced in that way.
Marcy, I wanted to make sure to ask this too, because this, you mentioned it like in the very beginning, you said NIL, and it made me immediately think of where things are going to transition moving forward. So I guess like my question that kind of popped up and I wanted to make sure to ask it was more skill sets, right? Coaches prior to or in previous years, we'll say 10, 15 years ago, I felt like, please correct me if I'm wrong, but recruiting was probably the number one thing that people look for to be able to get kids in the door. I feel like that went out the window. Maybe that's bumped back to number two, three, whatever it might be now. But now it's probably more fundraising and bringing in money, because if you can bring in the money, then you can bring in the recruits ultimately.
Yeah.
So what skill sets moving forward in the next, we'll say, 5, 10 years, whatever you think, is more important to be able to have, to be able to develop, be a coach in the coming years?
Great question. The revenue generation piece and being a fundraiser isn't really forward-looking. That has been the case and will continue to be. So really what I want to do to answer that is bring up entrepreneurial mindset and also optimism. And what I mean by that is going back almost to like the CEO role. If you think about CEOs, they're normally leading very complex organizations. College athletics has become a really complex organization pretty quickly. But those who really thrive in complex organizations are typically ones that are always thinking ahead and trying to think creatively, and they're solution oriented, right? And they're trying to find ways to navigate versus feeling discouraged or frustrated or, gosh, I hate where the industry is moving. And you really got to flip that and bring optimism, bring an entrepreneurial spirit, because I think that's really what's going to be critical and what's going to be required, not only for your own happiness, but to navigate all the changes that will continue to be complex. I don't know if it will settle out anytime soon, and I think it's just going to continue to be a rapidly changing industry. Now it will settle out some, but I just have that feeling. And so I think that's really important for people to think about, that probably isn't talked about maybe enough. And so I think that's just something that's helpful for either sitting head coaches who are listening or aspiring head coaches, is really changing the mindset to be more positive and optimistic and continue to remain focused on the development and the care for the student athletes. Never lose sight of that. That's one thing I'm really passionate about. I hope we never lose that. But again, yeah, having the entrepreneurial spirit, I think, is going to be really important.
Yeah, no, I'd love that. That's so good. If I were to be in that situation right now and I had to maybe sell myself, one of the things I would make sure that I really tried to do, and I did this, I think, fairly well as a head coach, but I think I would do it better, and I'd have to be doing it different now. To Doug's point, like with that question, you have to learn how to be a master delegator.
Yeah.
Because how you delegate is going to be reflected on who you hire, and who you hire is going to be reflected on how you delegate. And if you hire guys that you don't feel are responsible, that aren't creative, that aren't problem solvers, that aren't finishers, then that's going to affect your ability to delegate. So you really have to pay attention. So how you hire is how you delegate. How you delegate is how you hire. That's a big one, because there is so much, and you have to know, like when you pull away from campus and you're going to be gone for either a couple days recruiting or at a golf event where you got to paste on a smile for 6 straight hours, and they'll be in a golf scramble or something like that, or a charity event where you got to put on the black tie deal, and whatever it is, you have to know that who you've got back on campus can take care of the nest. And the guys that you hire or ladies that you hire, your ability to delegate is going to be totally reflected on what their ability and their skill sets are. So it's so precious to hire the right people. And I think that's one aspect of when you're talking about philosophy, you probably, and tell me if this is true of you, you guys, either you see this or agree with it. When someone is talking about their philosophy, it's not just X's and O's, right? And I sometimes think coaches think my philosophy, just X's and O's. No, like you guys want to hear, hey, how do you want to, you know, how do we want to travel, or this is academically or discipline or community service or alumni relations. Probably the, if there's a hack to it, and I hate to use the word hack, but a shortcut is how do you make every aspect of the program? What's the best looking possible snapshot of every aspect of the program? And what would the best possible snapshot of every aspect of the program look like for you? And you have to take pictures of that in your mind and then be able to communicate that.
Yeah. I'm glad you clarified that, because I don't often talk about the X's and O's, and that's almost for a reason. X's and O's are certainly discussed on an interview. But I think at that point, if you've gotten to the point of an interview, we've already done our homework and we feel confident about the X's and O's, that it is more about leading the program in all the aspects, not forgetting the X's and O's. But that's really, these coaches, that's probably your expertise, right? You're a coach by trade. That's your passion. And not that you can't get better at X's and O's and learn new things, but I think there's certainly a component of that needs to be articulated. But yeah, I think certainly, Alan, having everything else covered is really important.
I've even seen, and I actually just grabbed one real quick because they're sitting next to me and I wanted to make sure to reference it. Like these type of things that people get, I won't show the front of it because it has his name on it, but it's just literally, I've gone through the process now hiring, been able to help to hire different coaches. And then it basically gives a whole breakdown of a 3-year plan somebody has, their expectations, their academic, how they're going to do the academics, like all of those different things. So that's what's been able to, fortunate for me to be able to learn. So if anybody's listening to this and wants to hear about it, I can always take pictures of things without the name and send it out to people or give information, but to give some people an idea. But no, I just want to say thank you, and we appreciate you for being on here. I know you've been a huge supporter for us and being able to help us in a variety of different ways. So it's, I guess, first off, I'll say it's great to be able to officially connect with you again this way. I know I've always been behind the scenes prior to, so now I actually get a chance to talk. But two, as we said, it's just the ability to be able to pull you away from what you're doing for even just a brief amount of time to get to chat and help everybody else out there. It just means not only, I'm sure, to everybody else, but it means a ton to us. So we really do appreciate it.
Yeah, the feeling's mutual. Likewise, just love being on here with you guys. We're friends and family now, but certainly would love to come back and help in any way I can. Certainly this is a passion of mine and this is why I do what I do. So appreciate you having me.
No, this was great. I think anybody, regardless of what stage they're at, whether they're in the search firm conversations right now, on the fringe of the conversations, or thinking long term how to get to those conversations, wherever they are in those three realms, they're going to get something from this today. So this was a home run for us. So Rising Coaches got better today, thanks to you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Marcy. And to everybody else out there, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.